Chapter 19. Maggie left by the front door rather than go through the carport. Her hands were loaded down with equipment. The stair treads creaked under the additional weight. She moved fast because she didn't want Terry to ask them what they were up to. Gail was supposed to be out trapping Johns. Maggie and Kate were supposed to be writing speeding tickets. All three of them would be in a world of shit if her uncle found out they were going to Colored Town to talk to a pimp about a girl. She saw Lee Grant jogging up the sidewalk. He was wearing a gold tracksuit with green stripes down the legs. The plastic box for his hearing aid was tucked into his jacket pocket. He was the Boo Radley of the neighborhood, a little older than everybody else, a little quieter. A little strange. When Maggie was a kid, they'd called him Deaf Lee, which turned into Deathly, which everybody thought was no big deal because it wasn't like he could hear you making fun of him. Lee waved, but Maggie pretended not to see him. All she needed was for Terry to get the wrong idea. He was obviously spoiling for a fight.
Hey, Mama!
Gail pushed open the passenger side door. Her eyes were bruised from the whore yesterday, but she still had a grin on her face. She was dressed in her regular clothes. Her yellow skirt was hiked up so she could hold her flask between her legs. She wore matching gold lamé ankle boots with pointy high heels. A vivid blue fedora was tight on her head. Her dry black hair hung like straw around her shoulders. Gail said,
"Deathly's giving you the eye, ain't you, son?"
She turned to Kate in the back seat.
"Maggie's secret boyfriend, deaf as a doornail."
She raised her voice.
"Ain't that right, Deathly?"
Maggie burned with shame. The only thing to do with Gail was ignore her. She dropped the equipment on the floorboard. Gail revved the engine several times.
"Hold on, chickies."
Maggie jumped in before she was left on the street. The car burned rubber as it streaked away from the house. Gail roared with delight. She turned up the radio, Rolling Stones, and lit a new cigarette off the old one. "Here." Maggie passed back Kate's utility belt, a pair of Jimmy's old shoes, and one of his hats. "Sorry about the smell." Kate quietly laid the items on the seat beside her. She looked pale and weepy. Terry had obviously pushed her buttons. Or maybe it was the way Bud Deacon stuck his hand down his pants, or the stench of puke coming off Jet Elliott, or Cal Vic's inability to look anywhere above a woman's chest, or the way Chip Bigsby had leered at Kate like he wanted to drag her into the woods and ravage her. Maggie couldn't worry about other people right now. She had her own wounds to nurse. She was embarrassed by her family, mortified by her house, terrified that Terry would take the clues she and Kate had scraped together and bust open the shooter case. It was supposed to be her and Jimmy. He'd said so last night. They were going to take all the shooter files and go over them together, work together. After what Jimmy had said to her in the hospital, apologized, no less, Maggie thought it was all going to be different. For the first time in her adult life, Jimmy was actually going to treat her like a fellow officer. And then he'd woken up this morning with the same shitty attitude, and Maggie realized it was all a dream. Gail whooped as the car fishtailed around a turn. Maggie gripped the sides of her seat. The Mercury Cyclone was an expensive car for a cop. Knowing Gail, she'd probably stolen it from a pimp. Trouble, her husband, had souped up the engine and added a sound system that shook the windows. The seats were upholstered in white leather. Red shag carpet was contoured around the dashboard and glued to the ceiling. A pair of dice hung from the rearview mirror. Or mirrors, more precisely. Instead of one, there were 6 mirrors across the top of the windshield that offered a 180 view of everything behind the driver. Gail took a swig from her flask. There was a wide smile on her face. She was like every cop Maggie had ever met. No matter what came at her, she pretended it didn't matter. This was Gail's one true talent, perseverance. She got up every day and took on the world no matter how bruised and broken she was from the day before. Maggie wanted to be that way. She strived for that level of self-denial. Unfortunately, the reset button was only passed through the male side of the Lawson line. For Maggie, everything accumulated. Kate was obviously the same way. She was still staring out the window, her hand shielded her eyes, though the sun was on the other side of the car.
Shit! Gail turned down the music. What are you two gals sulking about?
Maggie silently enumerated the list. 5 cops had been murdered, her brother had been shot, her uncle was determined to drum her out of the police force.
Jesus Christ, what a waste!
Gail took a swig of whiskey, then tossed her flask onto the dash.
Both of y'all need to find a man worth shaving above your knees for.
She playfully pushed Maggie's arm.
Come on, kid. They ain't so bad once you get their clothes off.
Maggie thought of another list. Jimmy had kicked her in the teeth. Terry was a raging sadist. Jet Elliott was a disgusting drunk. Cal Vick was incompetent. Bud Deacon and Chip Bixby were practically Nazis. Even Rick Anderson had barked at her when she'd walked back into the house. Gail said,
You know old Deathly's cute in the right light. Got a Jagger thing going, but not in the face.
Gail, please. Even if Maggie wanted it, there was no way anything would ever happen with Lee. Their families despised each other. The Lawsons, because the Grants thought they were better than everybody else. The Grants, because they knew that they actually were better. The situation was less like the Capulets and Montagues, and more like the Hatfields and McCoys.
I got a treat for you.
Gail grabbed a cassette tape from the sun visor.
This one's a good one. Trouble's brother recorded it out in L.A. a few weeks back.
Maggie fought an eye roll. Trouble and his brother had a side business illegally recording concerts. The quality was always poor. Trouble was a drinker, his brother was a pothead. Most of their tapes captured their own stoned voices, singing along with the musicians. Gail reached back and patted Kate's leg a couple of times.
I picked this one just for you, sulky sheep.
Maggie didn't bother checking on Kate again. She stared out the windshield as the sound of a cheering crowd filled the car. Trouble's brother said something about having to take a piss. Gail laughed so hard she slapped the steering wheel. She turned up the volume. No one would mind. They were in Cabbage Town now. The area had been devastated years ago. The brick factories looked as empty inside as Maggie felt.
Come on!
Gail started banging out the beat on the dashboard. She didn't know the opening lyrics, but she belted out the chorus.
Poor, poor, pitiful me,
she nudged Maggie.
Poor, poor, pitiful me.
Maggie smiled despite herself. Gail bellowed,
Poor, poor, pitiful me.
Maggie shook her head, but her fingers started tapping to the beat. She let Gail's good mood take over. Maybe this was how to do it. Listen to a stupid song about feeling sorry for yourself so that you stopped feeling sorry for yourself. The only other alternative was to drink too much or turn into the kind of angry bitch nobody wanted to be around. Clearly, Kate wasn't thinking along these lines. She was hunched against the window. Her head was in her hand. And then the chorus came back on, and Kate gave a desperate wail.
Jesus!
Gail turned down the volume. She stared at Kate's reflection in the mirrors. Maggie did the same. Kate's shoulders were shaking. She wasn't just crying. She was weeping uncontrollably. Gail asked,
"She ever do this before?"
"No," Maggie answered, which was partly true. Kate had cried last night when the shift was over. That was nothing compared to her big, gulping sobs now. Gail said,
"Poor kid. She's really going at it. What set her off? Jet start telling his stupid Irish jokes?"
"Jet was passed out."
"Had to be something. Did Terry start in with his helter-skelter bullshit about the coloreds taking over the world?"
"We missed most of it." Maggie racked her brain. "The Kennedys, the mayor, Edward Spivey, the war. Bingo." Gail slowed the car. The wheels hit the broken sidewalk as the Mercury came to a stop in front of the old cotton bag factory. Her husband was killed in Nam.
"What?"
Maggie heard her voice go up in surprise.
"She was married? You didn't read her personnel file?"
Gail pushed open the car door.
"He got killed in Bangfuck Me or wherever the hell."
She threw the driver's seat forward and climbed into the back with Kate.
"Come here, sweetheart."
Kate practically fell into her arms.
"I'm sorry."
"It's all right, Mama."
Gail stroked her hair over her ear. She rested her boots on the back of the folded seat.
"Those ass hairs spent half the war in whorehouses and the other half in VD clinics."
For some reason, this made Kate cry even harder. Gail rolled her eyes at Maggie, but she hugged Kate tighter.
"That's okay, sugar, just let it out."
She snapped her fingers at Maggie and mimed taking a drink. The flask felt half empty. Maggie unscrewed the cap and handed it back. Gail took a small portion, then offered the flask to Kate.
"This'll do ya."
Kate didn't have to be cajoled. She took a healthy drink.
"Don't be greedy."
Gail pulled away the flask. She helped Kate sit up, and then she finished the whiskey.
"You all cried out now, chickie."
Kate wiped underneath her eyes. Her hands still trembled, but at least her tears had stopped.
"I'm sorry," she managed. "I tried not to. I don't know what came over me."
Gail said,
"We all get that way."
She winked at Maggie, acknowledging that none of them ever got that way, especially in public.
"I'm sorry,"
Kate repeated. She straightened her shirt, adjusted her shoulder mic.
"I must look a mess."
Gail shrugged it off, but she warned,
"Don't ever let those bastards know they got to you. They see you cry, that's the end of it. They'll never take you seriously."
Kate nodded, but she obviously didn't get it. The hardest battles didn't take place on the streets. They happened inside the squad room. Every time a female officer took a step forward, a male officer felt like he was being pushed back. The guys pounced the minute you showed weakness.
"Shit, you gals don't know how easy you got it."
Gail threw the empty flask back on the dash.
"My first week on the job, every morning I'd open my locker and there'd be a fresh pile of shit inside."
Her lip curled in disgust.
"Terry, Mac, Red, Les, Cal, Chip, Bud, all of them took turns trying to outdo each other. They jizzed in my purse, pissed in my shoes, crapped in the trunk of my car. And I leave one bloody tampon on your Uncle Terry's dashboard, and suddenly I'm the crazy bitch."
Maggie must have heard wrong. She looked at Kate, who was equally perplexed.
"Talk about a smell," Gail said. Middle of goddamn August, hot as hell. He's lucky I was at the end of my period.
That was all it took. Both Maggie and Kate exploded with laughter. Maggie couldn't stop. She grabbed the back of her seat to steady herself, her stomach cramped, her throat ached. She couldn't get it out of her head. The look on her Uncle Terry's face when he climbed into his squad car and saw the gift that Gail Patterson had left for him. She hoped he threw up a hot stream of bourbon. She hoped he still gagged every time he thought about it. Gail wiped her mouth with the back of her hand.
Yeah, they didn't fuck with me after that.
Tears were streaming down Maggie's face. Kate had her head in her hands again, but this time she shook with laughter.
All right, gals.
Gail slid toward the door.
Enough lollygagging. Let's get this show on the road.
Kate looked at Maggie, and they both started laughing again. Gail sighed as she climbed behind the steering wheel.
Come on now, wind it down.
Maggie took a deep breath. Her stomach still hurt from laughing. She wiped her eyes, shook her head. Gail took off her fedora and wedged it between the dash and the windshield. She lit another cigarette. The Mercury went into a wide curve as she pulled back onto the road. Maggie finally managed to stop sputtering with laughter. The trick was not to look at Kate. She wiped her eyes, she settled down into the seat, and stared out the side window again. The scenery rolled by, depressing in its monotony. The abandoned factories gave way to run-down houses, which reverted back to empty factories. Gail was taking the back way to the west end. Jimmy had been in CT yesterday. Maggie doubted he had asked for permission, which was probably why he'd been shot. She wondered what he was really asking his snitch about. Maggie got the feeling that there were things about Dawn Wesley's murder that no one but Jimmy would ever know. Gail asked,
"You got any new intel on these mothers?"
Maggie shook her head. She had filled Gail in before roll call this morning. A tranny pimp nobody had ever met, and a psychopath henchman who liked cutting white women.
"Listen to me, sheep."
Gail directed her words to Kate's reflection in the mirrors.
"You know why the colored girls are so high on themselves?"
Kate seemed offended by the question. "I hadn't given it much thought."
Gail said, "Black men. That's why. You hear them in the halls, on the street, in the diner. They see a black woman, even one got a face like a shovel. They're all, 'Hey, good looking, let me take you to dinner. Let me buy you some coffee.' They tell them they're beautiful, flirt with them all the time. You know what I mean?"
Kate looked mystified. The black men in her life were probably all holding rakes or pushing elevator buttons.
Gail said, "Black girls tune it out easy. They've been hearing that shit all their lives. Now a white woman hears it and she's all, 'Oh, golly, he must think I'm pretty.'"
Kate's eyes narrowed. Gail had done a pretty good imitation of her frou-frou accent.
Gail said, "That's how pimps are. They hurl out compliments like it's a business, because it is. They're in the business of tricking out women."
"You're saying all pimps are black men?"
Kate still sounded haughty, so Maggie took this one. She framed it as a syllogism. "Not all black men are pimps, but all pimps are black men." Kate raised her eyebrows.
"Stop playing, you two, 'cause this ain't no joke."
Gail checked over her shoulder before passing a truck. She told Maggie,
"Tell her how they trick him out."
Maggie had gotten the depressing lesson off Gail a long time ago. She hoped that Kate paid as careful attention as she had. "The pimps get the girls when they're 12 or 13. They're runaways or addicts or something bad happened back home. The pimps seduce them. They pretend that they're in love with them. They shoot them up with dope. It doesn't take long to hook them. Then they turn them out, or sometimes it's called tricking them out into the streets. Maggie shrugged, because it really was that simple. The girls have sex with 20, 30 strangers a day. The pimps keep all the money. Gail finished. And then when the girls get too old, 20, 25, the pimp either sells them down the road or he slits their throats and tosses them in a ditch. Kate said, Violet's around that age. Gail wasn't irritated by the observation. She just nodded. You wait for it, Mama. One day you're gonna roll up on a 1054 and it's gonna be Violet's dead face staring back at you. Gail shook a cigarette out of the pack. You know our objective? Maggie's been incredibly forthcoming. Maggie took the dig because she deserved it. We're gonna talk to Cersei and see if he'll let us speak to his girls, she told Kate. He runs older women like Violet, probably because he's new to town. The area where Don Wesley was shot in Five Points, that's where the hags work. Whitehall, Kate said. She'd done a good job studying the shooter files. Each part of the five is divvied up by the pimps. Maggie tried to frame it in a way that Kate would understand. Think of the area as a shopping mall for sex. Gail barked a laugh. Good one. Maggie continued. You want black girls? Go down the Marietta spike. There are some Asians down Decatur. Mixed gals are on Peachtree. Prime real estate is north of Edgewood near Woodruff Park. That's your Saks Fifth Avenue. Big money. Pimps are always fighting for that patch. It's where the young white girls work. They get the easy customers, businessmen, lawyers, doctors. The freaks go straight to Whitehall. Think of it as a JCPenney catalog store. The girls are older. Their pimps don't take care of them. The freaks like to beat on women. They're looking for a discount. They don't care so much what her face looks like or how old she is. Gail said, That's why we want to talk to them. Them gals' lives depend on figuring out who's gonna hurt them, who's safe to go with. They watch everybody, see everything. I'd bet my left tit one of them either saw something or has a regular she knows for sure's got a grudge against cops. Maggie added, There's a lot of freaks out there who watch cops. You see them at the station sometimes. They just hang out for no reason. They go to crime scenes. They have police scanners. As she talked, Maggie felt a weight being lifted from her chest. After reading the shooter files, she had been worried that the killer might be a cop. The more she thought about it, the more it made sense that they were looking for some freak wannabe. Somebody like that would know codes and routines. Kate said, Well, maybe they washed out of the academy or didn't last on the streets. Gail couldn't resist. You making a confession there, sheep? Kate didn't laugh. Jimmy said the man who shot Don was black. Wouldn't you notice a black civilian hanging around the station house? She added, I mean, if he's not already there because he's a pimp. Gail made a face. Depends on the house. The commissioner's moving all the checkers around the board. That's what happened to Bud Deacon. He got moved to an all-black house. He tells them to go fuck themselves, they fire him. He sues him, judge puts him back on the job pending the trial. They should have moved Jed Elliott, Maggie said. He doesn't know where he is half the time anyway. Hey, Gail warned. Everybody knew Jet drank because he had a sick kid. Mac McKay's filing a lawsuit, too. Said he was demoted for complaining about a hostile work environment. Wear a couple of tits to work, Mac. You'll see what hostile's all about. Maggie smiled at the image. Chip Bigsby walked out when they put a woman in his unit, but nobody fired him. Chipper's not so bad, Gail told Kate.
Back when I was so green I was shitting shamrocks, I ended up pinned down behind the counter during a bank robbery. Thought I was gonna die. Seriously, I was making my peace. Then from out of nowhere, up pops Chip Bigsby, guns blazing. I truck it on out of the back while Chip takes the heat. Dumbass caught a bullet right here. She tapped her collarbone. It was meant for me, but what are you gonna do? Get old Chipper drunk enough, he'll show you the scar.
I'll put that right on my list, Kate said, but she was obviously on to something else. What about with men? Where do they go for sex?
Gail looked at Maggie. That's what we're talking about, sister. They go to Five Points to get laid.
I meant sex with other men.
Listen to our gal.
Gail sounded proud that Kate even knew such a thing existed.
The queers go to Piedmont Park. They don't have to pay for it, lucky bastards.
Piedmont? Kate sounded offended. Her apartment was right up the street.
Talk to Jimmy about it, Gail said. He's always doing ferry runs with the boys after work.
Ferry runs? Kate was doing the parrot thing again, repeating words. What on earth are ferry runs? Maggie explained. They go into the park and beat up gay men. Kate still sounded appalled. Jimmy goes to the park and beats up homosexuals?
Why wouldn't he? Gail tapped her cigarette out the window. All of them do it, Bud, Mac, Terry, Vic. They're just blowing off steam. Who cares if a bunch of faggots get their heads knocked in? They shouldn't be doing that nasty shit anyway.
She took a drag off her cigarette.
Heads up, gals. We just went from bandstand to soul train.
Maggie looked out the window. Black faces looked back. Some were curious. Others were perplexed. All were hostile. They just entered Colored Town. The area had sneaked up on her. Maggie hadn't noticed the general dilapidation giving way to unpainted shacks and lean-tos. A long time ago, Gail had told Maggie that blacks and whites were separated by rocks. Blacks lived in houses built on dirt. Whites lived in houses built on stone foundations. Maggie didn't really understand the difference until she saw it with her own eyes. Colored Town crawled through the west side, which contained Atlanta's last still-operating industrial area. Foundries and factories belched out black smoke. Tanneries spewed rotting flesh and chemicals into Peachtree Creek. There was a constant buzz from the massive power relay stations that dotted the main road. This wasn't the projects. There was no government housing with on-site management and hourly police patrols. The people who lived in CT either didn't want or didn't qualify for government assistance. They were on their own. They made do with what they had. Bare plywood walls kissed wet Georgia clay. Newspapers plugged holes in windows. The plumbing was so primitive that outhouses dotted the bare backyards. Even in the dead of winter, front doors hung open to air out the odors. Kate started to cough. The smell wasn't that bad, but it had a cumulative effect. Maggie had spent her first year on the job coughing up all kinds of disgusting filth. Delia had been appalled by some of the things she'd brought up. Maggie was constantly sick with a cold or the flu. Her doctor told her to quit her job or end up in an early grave. Gail craned her neck to look up at the houses. They were in one of the residential stretches that specialized in rooms rented by the week. She asked, "You got an address?" Kate coughed again before answering, 819 Huff Road. "Shit," Gail grumbled. "This is Huff, but ain't a one of these places got a number." Ghetto landlords weren't the only ones who didn't post their street numbers. The problem plagued the city.
Most calls, Maggie had no idea whether or not she was in the right location until someone started screaming. There, Kate pointed to a house. That must be it. She'd picked the nicest house on the block. The windows were clean, the dirt yard was swept. The steps to the porch were stacked concrete blocks that read, Property of Atlanta Waterworks. As with all of the houses, the unpainted clapboard was weathered brown. The front door set it apart, the bottom part was red, the top was green, and there was a yellow circle around the rectangular window. Gail asked, Where do you see a number? The door, Kate answered. Those are the colors of the Portuguese flag. Maggie said, The colored girls said the house was run by a Portuguese lady. Well, la-dee-da. Gail pulled the car over, parking behind an old truck on blocks. Portuguese? Where the hell is that? Kate devoted her full attention to putting on Jimmy's shoes. Maybe she was learning after all. Gail said, This part of CT is on the outskirts of an area called Blandtown. We pass through Lightning and Techwood on the way. She started pointing out landmarks. Way over that away is Perry Homes, which is a shithole you'll see for yourself soon enough. Trains, there's the Tilford Yard and Inman Yard between Marietta and Perry Boulevard. The Howell Railway is what you're hearing. All the trains go through there. It's on the other side of the plow factory. Not Y for Y. Triangular. Don't ask me why. She seemed to miss her own joke. That smell is the meat packing plant. Place will turn you into a vegetarian. Found a dead hooker there once inside a cow carcass. That was some sick shit. Wish I still had the picture. You following this? Kate nodded. Of course, thank you. Maggie got out of the car. She heard the distant rumble of trains roaring through the Howell Yard. The low moan of a whistle pierced the air. The noise was a constant in these neighborhoods. Freight ran night and day through the Y. If you stood still long enough, you could feel the vibrations of the engines through the soles of your feet. The Portuguese house was in the center of the road. Directly across from it was an abandoned storage warehouse. The red facade was ubiquitous to the city, constructed of slave bricks that had been thrown from Georgia clay in between cotton seasons. The windows were gone. Some of the bricks had been chipped away, exposing the black tar paper behind them. There was a puddle of water on the ground at her feet. Instinctively, Maggie looked up to check for rain. She saw a hand resting on one of the windows in the upper level of the storage facility. No, Mama, listen, Gail said from the front seat. She was on the radio calling in their location. She knew the dispatcher, so it took longer than usual. Maggie forced her gaze away from the storage building. There's probably a kid up there, or maybe a bum, looking for a place to hole up. She pulled the metal clips out of her front pants pocket and hooked them onto her underbelt. She was buckling her utility belt when Kate got out of the car. She held her belt in one hand and Jimmy's hat in the other. Kate said, The good news is that the shoes fit, so thank you very much for that. The bad news is... Maggie handed over the metal clips that Kate had left on the dining room table. Always put them in... The same pocket. Thank you. Kate hooked the clips. She was better at putting on her belt today. It only took two tries. As a rule, Maggie never asked people about their personal lives, but she figured Kate owed her an explanation for the earlier outburst. When did your husband die?
2 years ago.
She straightened her nightstick. She clipped her transmitter onto the back of her belt.
I didn't know the details were in my personnel file.
They do background investigations. Make sure you're not a communist. Maggie didn't tell Kate that just about anybody could read your file. It's no big deal.
Oh, I'm sure.
Kate adjusted her collar. She seemed ready to change the subject. I've been thinking that I'm allowed one really big humiliation each day. Do you think I've hit my quota for Tuesday?
You had your reasons.
Come on, Lawson. I'd rather you think I'm an idiot than feel sorry for me.
Maggie smiled. You had to admire her spirit.
I still think you're an idiot.
Of course you do.
She smelled Jimmy's hat. Her face soured. No hats today. Maggie threw her hat into the car. Kate did the same. Check your gun. Kate unsnapped the strap around her revolver. She pulled her weapon with a surprising fluidity. She ejected the cylinder, then clicked it back into place. Gail joined them on the sidewalk. A cigarette dangled from her lips.
She know how to use that thing?
I hope we don't find out. Kate stuck the gun back in her holster. She was grinning, pleased with herself.
I practiced this morning.
I think I liked you better when you were pathetic.
Gail reached into her purse and opened the drawstrings around the Crown Royal bag where she kept her gun. Her revolver had a pearl handle. The tooling around the muzzle wasn't regulation. She hot-loaded her bullets with extra gunpowder, a violation that just about everybody on the force committed.
Gail told Kate, "Papers open, mouth shut, you hear?"
"Yes, ma'am."
Gail narrowed her eyes. The problem with Kate was that you couldn't tell when she was being a smartass and when she was just being smart.
"Fuck it," Gail decided.
She walked up the dirt path toward the house. Maggie tapped the leather safety strap on her revolver, indicating that Kate should snap hers closed. She didn't wait to see if her suggestion was followed. If Kate was going to do this job, and it seemed like she was either too stubborn or too stupid not to, then she would have to sink or swim on her own. The stiletto heels of Gail's ankle boots tapped up the cinder block steps. The porch was small and sturdy. The boards were painted red to match the door, which gave the unsettling feeling that they were standing in blood. Maggie looked through the narrow window in the front door. She saw a set of stairs leading up to the second floor, but nothing else.
"That's called a Methuselah."
Gail nodded toward an ornate metal box nailed to the right side of the door. The top was angled toward the entrance. Gail clicked her tongue as she gave Kate a bawdy wink.
"Jews use it."
"Gosh, how interesting."
Kate touched the box with the tips of her fingers.
"Police!"
Gail banged on the door so hard that the little window rattled. She told Kate,
"I cracked one open once. It's got paper inside. Funny little squiggles on it."
Gail banged the door again.
"Open up!"
They were shuffling footsteps inside the house. Suddenly, a few wild strands of black and gray hair appeared in the window. Maggie guessed they were looking at the top of someone's head.
"Unbelievable."
Gail kicked the door.
"Open up before I break this goddamn door down."
Four locks and a chain were disengaged before the door cracked open. The old woman standing in front of them looked like a Victorian in mourning. Everything was black, from the high lace collar that fanned up her neck to the long-sleeved black dress that touched the tips of her black shoes. She was short, which is why she couldn't look through the window. There was a mole high on her left cheek that gave her a wall-eyed look. Her long salt and pepper hair was spun into a bun on the top of her head. Maggie thought about what Delroy and Watson had said. She could easily imagine a nest of spiders living in there.
Gail said, "Open the door, Grandma."
"What do you want?"
Her voice was deep and heavily accented. She sounded like Ricardo Montalban. Not the female version, but the actual guy from the car commercials.
"I have work to do."
"So do we."
Gail tapped the police badge on Maggie's chest.
We need to talk to Sir She.
The old woman's eyebrows drawbridged up. She was smiling in a way that Maggie didn't trust. Still, she opened the door to let them in. Gail flicked her cigarette into the yard before entering the house. She took in her surroundings, same as Maggie. Stairs cut through the central hallway that divided the house. To the left was a formal parlor, to the right, a dining room. The kitchen was at the back of the house. Maggie scanned each room. You never just walked into a space without looking for danger. Check the windows and doorways. Make sure you can see everybody's hands. Gail always said female cops, added another step. Judge the decor and cleanliness so you can make value judgments about the witness and or perpetrator. On this latter point, the Portuguese lady was blameless. Her hair was terrifying, but she kept a clean house. Dishes dried neatly in a rack by the sink. The runner down the hallway was straight as an arrow. The floors were swept clean. There were no cobwebs. Maggie guessed the furniture was from the old woman's home country. The parlor contained a colorful, dainty-looking chair and a flowery settee with a curved, carved back. Doilies spotted every surface. There was a solid black tea set on the coffee table. Matching place settings were laid out on the dining room table.
Bizal Haj, Kate mumbled.
Gail ignored her, which was usually a good idea.
Who's in the house?
The old woman gestured up the stairs.
At the moment, I have three boarders. One is at work, the others.
She shook her head.
The Paskudniak and the Fresser. They think I'm running a shantois.
Gail frowned at the foreign words.
What the hell?
The pimp and his bodyguard, Maggie guessed. She didn't speak a lick of Portuguese, but the math wasn't all that hard. Are they upstairs?
They rent two rooms. They do business out of the front one.
She shook her head again.
Meshugana, the both of them.
Kate looked wary.
How, Meshugana?
Instead of answering, the old woman called up the stairs.
Anthony!
There was a loud thump overhead. Heavy footsteps banged across the floor. Grit fell from the plaster ceiling. The chandelier swayed.
What is it, old woman?
An enormous black man stood at the top of the stairs. He was over 6 feet tall and at least 350. His head was comparatively tiny, like a joke snowman if the snowman was a knife-wielding psychopath. His eyes settled on Maggie, then Kate, then Gail, then the Portuguese lady.
Gail said, Jesus, Tubby, they find you on a meat hook at the butcher shop.
He wasn't amused.
What you white bitches want?
Gail grabbed the railing and pulled herself up the stairs.
I need to talk to your boss.
Go fuck yourself.
Every chance I get. You see these uniforms?
I see a washed-up old whore and two bitches playing dress-up.
Yeah, well.
Gail didn't dispute the assessment. She stopped a few steps down from the big guy.
We ain't leaving, Fat Albert, so you might as well mosey on back to the junkyard gang.
There was a flash of silver, a series of clicks, and Anthony was holding a switchblade to Gail's neck.
You want to say that again, bitch?
Gail heaved a wheezy sigh.
I know you can't see your dick, Lardo, but I'm pretty sure you don't want to lose it.
He looked down. Gail's gun was pointed straight at his crotch. She cocked the hammer.
See how my hand's shaking? That's 'cause it wants to pull the trigger so bad.
No need for that, officer.
There was another man at the top of the stairs. Maggie couldn't see him, but she knew he wasn't local. His accent put him from somewhere up north. He said,
Anthony, let these women pass.
The sooner we find out what they want, the sooner they'll leave. Anthony turned sideways. This didn't help matters. Gail squeezed by him first. Maggie sucked in her stomach, but she still brushed up against him as she entered the hallway. She had to pull Kate by the arm to get her through. Sir Shi stood in front of an open doorway. He was tall, very thin, with skin the color of river water and a tight afro that stuck out just past his ears. He had a red and gold scarf tied around his neck. His purple shirt was silk with white pearl snaps. His trousers were twill in a black and white herringbone. They were tight enough to show the outline of everything he had underneath. Maggie thought he was more of a J.J. Walker than a tranny pimp. There was nothing delicate about his features. He didn't hold his hand bent to the wrist or wear makeup. The colored girls were right about his boots, though. They were vicious. Gold pointed triangles shaped the toes. The edges looked needle sharp. Blood stained the white patent leather. The pimp zeroed in on Kate. He flashed a crocodile smile.
Lordy, lordy, you are the most luminescent creature I have ever seen. Your skin reminds me of bone china, and I could wrap both my hands around that dainty little waist.
So much for warnings. Kate practically preened.
Thank you.
Gail rolled her eyes at Maggie.
You're Sir Shi.
His smile melted into a thin, angry line.
Sir Sheik. Sheik.
Kate laughed. Maggie knew she would.
Don't you crack a speak English.
Gail said,
What on the street is your tranny fag?
He cupped his hand to the front of his pants.
I can prove you wrong right here.
Nah, I already got one skinny coon got lost up in my cooch. Hurts like hell when I sneeze.
Gail walked into his room.
Shit, it's Fibber McGee's closet in here.
Maggie saw what she meant. Compared to downstairs, the pimp's room was a sty. Boxes were stacked everywhere. Trash filled the corners, stuffing poked out of holes in the furniture. There were two wooden chairs with the backs broken off. They were pushed close enough together that Maggie guessed this was where Anthony sat. His half-empty glass of iced tea was on the windowsill. A baseball bat leaned against the wall. All Maggie saw was danger. In the right hands, the bat could be more deadly than her revolver. Likewise, the broken spindles on the chairs. The glass holding the tea could be turned into a weapon. God only knew what was hidden inside the holes in the furniture or tucked away in the boxes. Maggie checked outside the window. The abandoned storage facility was across the street. She hadn't seen a gloved hand before. The brick had been chipped away around the window opening so that the granite header could be salvaged. What she'd seen from the street was a piece of black tar paper flapping in the wind. She turned back to the room. The real danger was standing 15 feet away. Anthony grunted as he leaned against the door jamb. His eyes followed Gail's every move. His jaw was tight. His hands were fisted. Maggie got the feeling he wasn't the type to let things go. The colored girls had warned her that the big guy was crazy, but Maggie had seen up close what crazy looked like, courtesy of her father, and she always assumed that other people wouldn't know crazy if it bit them in the ass. In her expert opinion, Anthony looked just like the kind of crazy who could bite their asses clean off.
All right, ladies.
Sheik sat on the couch. He smoothed down the legs of his trousers.
You gonna stand there and gawp, or you gonna tell me why you're here? What the hell?
Gail sat in one of the chairs across from him. She left her purse in her lap, zipper open. Maggie let Kate take the other chair so she had a reason to stand. She leaned her back into the corner. The window was to her right. Sheik was front and center. Gail and Kate were at an angle to where he sat on the couch. Anthony stayed in the doorway. Maggie didn't look at him. She could feel him. He radiated hostility. Quietly, Maggie unsnapped the safety strap around her revolver. She knew Gail could pull her gun from her purse in under a second, but it would take more than that to bring Anthony down.
So, Gail wasn't one for lengthy preamble. Whitehall, you're running girls there.
Am I? Sheik paused a moment before saying, I don't think anybody's running anything. Your stormtroopers have jailed just about every working girl in the city.
A cop was murdered, Gail reminded him.
You can do something about it.
Sheik quipped.
You think I give a shit about a dead pig?
Gail braced her hands on her knees.
Looky here, Sambo. I ain't got time to chase my tail around no tree.
Kate straightened like a stick had been shoved up her ass. Sheik zeroed in on her.
What you looking at, slit?
He had an accent now, and it was pure street.
You gonna answer me?
For a change, Kate had nothing to say. Sheik couldn't push Gail, so he was going to screw with Kate.
Come up into my house, staring at me like I'm some kind of bug under a piece of glass? Who the fuck are you, bitch, staring at me like that?
Gail didn't move. Neither did Maggie. If Kate was going to keep digging herself into these holes, she'd have to learn how to get herself out of them.
Well? Sheik demanded. What you gotta say, bitch? You want me to make you talk?
Anthony stirred in the doorway. The floor creaked under his weight. Kate blurted,
Your scarf!
Sheik was as surprised as the rest of them. He put his hand to the scarf.
What about it?
I just wondered.
Kate's voice shook.
Wondered if it was Chanel.
Sheik stared at her for a beat. After what seemed like a good, long while, he smiled.
Of course it is.
Kate swallowed audibly. Her voice still shook, but only a little.
It's very stylish. I looked at it for myself.
He studied her for a moment.
With your coloring, you should stay away from reds. You're a winter, right?
Autumn, but I've always felt I fall somewhere in between.
Maggie wanted to bang her head against the wall. If somebody had told her last week that she'd be standing in the ghetto listening to a Yankee pimp discuss the K-Gill color method, she would have laughed in their faces.
Christ, Gail muttered. Can we get back to business here?
Sheik raised an eyebrow.
What business is that? I'm betting one of your girls saw something the other night that cop was killed.
Sheik leaned back on the couch.
Oh, I know at least one of them saw something.
Gail sat back too, at least as much as the chair would allow. She was pretending it didn't matter, but they all knew it mattered.
What'd she see?
Again, he didn't respond immediately. He smoothed his trousers. He touched the knot in his scarf. Sheik had the upper hand now, and he was going to enjoy it for as long as he could. Gail looked at her watch. She looked back at Maggie. She looked at her watch again. Finally, Sheik said,
It seemed to me that a man with such valuable information should get some sort of recompense. All right.
Gail sounded annoyed, but Maggie knew crafting the deal was her favorite part.
What do you want?
Sheik turned his attention back to Kate. He was flirting with her again.
What should I ask for, Autumn?
Kate had worked the streets less than 2 full days, but she'd obviously been paying attention.
We can let you work north of Edgewood.
Gail made a show of being outraged.
Why don't you give him the keys to the goddamn city while you're at it?
Sheik played right into her hands.
That sounds good. North of Edgewood.
He looked at Anthony.
You like that, brother? I like it good.
Anthony nodded his head up and down.
You'll have to get some better girls,
Gail warned, like she gave a flip what they did. Them toothless old whores of yours won't pull in the traffic. I can get some.
Two, Gail told him. Stick 'em near the park, not inside. You go anywhere else, you'll end up with your belly gutted, and it might be a cop what does it.
She leaned forward again.
Now, no more bullshit, Sheik. You better give us some goddamn good information. I mean the kind we can verify.
Sheik tapped his fingers to his knee. He was obviously thinking again. And then he decided. He reached his hand into a hole in the back of the couch. Both Maggie and Gail drew their guns. Sheik said,
Good Lord, bitches, give me some credit.
He waited for them to lower their weapons. He saw that they weren't going to. He moved slowly, his hand inching out like a stop-motion cartoon. At first, Maggie didn't recognize what he was holding. It was like reading a clue in a crossword puzzle and seeing the thing in your mind but being completely incapable of translating that image into a word that filled in all the blocks. But then she knew. Jimmy's radio transmitter. Sheik lofted up the plastic brick like a trophy.
This verification enough?
Maggie slid her gun back into her holster. She leaned heavily against the wall.
All right.
Gail didn't take the transmitter. She lowered her revolver, but she kept the gun in her lap instead of returning it to her purse.
Tell me where you got that.
One of my girls found it in the alley where that cop was killed.
Whitehall, CNS Bank.
It was just sitting there in the alley.
Gail didn't believe him.
Where's the girl?
I gotta hid somewhere. She saw something scared the shit out of her.
Sheik looked at Kate, then Maggie, then Gail again.
Oughta scare the shit out of you too.
Gail asked,
What'd she see?
It ain't a what, it's a who.
And the dude my gal saw sure as shit ain't nothing like the brother you guys put out on the news.
Sheik grinned.
You know, this is some really good shit I'm giving you. I think we need to revisit our deal.
Gail jammed her gun into the pimp's face.
Where is she?
You gonna Edward Spivey me? Plant some bogus shit in my room and try to put me on trial?
I might.
Sheik stared down the muzzle of the gun.
You listen careful to me, bitch. Either you take that gun out of my face or your dried-out old pussy goes out that window.
Anthony took a step forward. Maggie did too. He took another step. She pulled her revolver again. The grip was warm in her hand. And then two things happened, one immediately after the other. Kate collapsed to the floor. The side of Sheik's head was vaporized. At least, that was how it looked to Maggie. The right side of Sheik's face was there one second, eye, cheekbone, jaw. And then the next second, it disappeared in a spray of blood. Somebody screamed. The window exploded. Or maybe Maggie was just now hearing it, the same as the distant crack of a rifle that reverberated in her ears. One shot, head shot. The shooter. Maggie hit the floor. Kate was already there. Her eyes were closed. She wasn't moving. A trickle of blood ran from her ear down her cheek. Broken glass was everywhere. Maggie's hand was empty. Her revolver was gone. Gail's chair shattered to pieces. The sound was like another gunshot. Anthony had jumped on top of her. He'd assumed the bullet had come from Gail's gun. He straddled her, pinning her down. The switchblade was in his hand. Gail grabbed his wrist with both hands. Her arms shook as the knife got closer. The blade was inches from her eye.
No! Maggie scrambled to get Kate's gun. The revolver was twisted inside her holster. The snap was bent on the safety strap. Gail gave a blood-curdling scream. Maggie watched helplessly as the long, sharp blade was driven straight into Gail's eyeball. The snap finally gave. The strap ripped open. Anthony sat back on his knees. That was the last thing he ever did. Maggie pointed the gun at his head and pulled the trigger. Her senses went haywire. She felt her finger pulling the trigger, but she didn't hear the gun fire. She didn't see Anthony fall onto his back. But she could tell from the way the floor shook that he was down. Smoke trailed up from the muzzle, but she couldn't smell the cordite. She heard clicking. Click, click, click. Like a set of wind-up teeth. The gun was empty, but Maggie was still pulling the trigger. She dropped the revolver on the floor. The thud was muffled by the time it reached her ears. Sound came back to her like an approaching siren. First, it was so far away she could barely hear it. Then suddenly, it was loud and heart-stopping.
Jesus! Oh, Jesus!
Gail panted. Her chest heaved as she tried to force air into her lungs. The knife was still jammed into her eye. The handle wavered back and forth like a tent pole. Gail? Maggie crawled over to her. Gail!
What?
Gail reached up to her eye.
Don't!
Maggie grabbed Gail's hand. This wasn't real. It was a drill. None of this was really happening. Maggie didn't really just kill somebody. She wasn't really looking at a knife sticking out of Gail Patterson's eye. What next? What next? Maggie grabbed her mic with her free hand.
Dispatch, this is Unit 5. 63 times 2, my location. Repeat 63 times 2, urgent. My 1020.
Dispatch came back quickly. 10-4, Unit 5, help is on the way. Maggie dropped her mic. She looked around the room. The carnage was unreal. So much blood. Pieces of bone and cartilage sprayed the couch. Shards of Sheik's teeth bit into the wall. None of this had really happened. These people weren't really dead. Gail was fine. Kate was fine. Maggie had not killed a man. She had not pointed her gun at a man's head and emptied her entire load into his skull.
Maggie, Gail whispered. Is it bad?
No.
Is it?
Maggie forced herself to look at the switchblade sticking out of Gail's face. She was covered in Anthony's blood. A clear liquid seeped from her eye, dragging a line that cut to the pasty white skin of her cheek. This had happened. All of it had happened. It's not so bad, Maggie lied. The blade was 6 inches at least. A third of it went through Gail's eye. The other third sunk into her brain.
Oma?
Kate mumbled. She was coming too. Her hand went to her head. The top of her ear was bloody where the bullet had nicked her skin.
Kate.
Maggie forced an authority into her tone that she did not feel. Kate, get up. Now. She sat up quickly, panicked. She looked at Sir Sheik. She looked at Anthony. She looked at Gail. Her mouth opened, but only a squeak came out. Maggie said, "It's not as bad as it looks." Kate couldn't take her eyes off the knife. She knew it was bad. That she didn't say so was a minor miracle.
Fuck me,
Gail whispered. The panic was taking over. The muscles in her neck stood out like ropes as she fought to keep her head from moving.
It's bad. I know it's bad.
You're gonna be... Maggie's voice caught. She wasn't going to be all right. None of this was all right.
Don't.
Gail's voice was shallow.
Don't you goddamn cry, Lawson.
I'm not, Maggie lied. I won't. Both of you, I'll take this knife and stab you myself, you hear me?
All right.
Kate had no idea what she was agreeing to. Her pupils were so blown open that she looked stoned. Maggie tightened her grip on Gail's hand. She willed her tears to stop. She had to keep her promise. The ambulance crew, the responding officers, whoever was on their way, she couldn't let them see her cry. They had to be tough gals. They had to be stronger than everybody else. Maggie looked up at the ceiling. She took a deep breath and slowly let it go. Her eyes could not find a spot to rest on. She didn't want to see Gail or Kate. She didn't want to see the two dead men whose bodies were already giving off the metallic odor of congealing blood. She looked out the broken window at the abandoned storage building across the street. The flapping piece of tar paper was gone. Chapter 20. Fox passed the pimped-out Mercury as he walked away from the scene. He plucked Kate's hat from the back seat, leaving Jimmy Lawson's for the rest of her shift. Flowers. He knew that Kate's hair would smell like flowers. Not like perfume, but the real thing that grew out of the ground. Fox let himself consider what it would be like to feel her skin, to bite her with his teeth, to screw her into the ground, to one by one pluck away her petals, to cut himself on her thorns. He always felt this way after a kill, not satisfied but craving more. He owed Kate Murphy. She had led him here. Not that Fox didn't keep his ear to the ground. The police scanner had been filled with chatter since Don Wesley had been taken out. Nobody gave a shit when Fox was killing drug dealers and street scum. Put down a couple of cops and that got their attention. Even if they were the kind of cops who deserved to die. Still, Fox was getting tired of surprises. And he was getting tired of correcting his own past mistakes. Fox had been halfway home when he decided he needed to walk the alley where Jimmy and Don Wesley had been going at it. Leaving a kill scene like that was lazy, and Fox was not lazy. Lesson 8. Always follow the plan. This was how it happened. You stuck your gun in their face. You made them call dispatch and clock out. You unplugged their radio so they couldn't call for help. You put them on their knees. You made them lace their fingers together and put them on top of their heads. You pulled the trigger. Pop, pop. Two men, two bodies. Two more names off the list. And then you always checked the scene to make sure you hadn't left anything for the good guys to find. By the time Fox got back to the alley, the spunk and blood were already drying on the ground. Grid search, just like they used to do for landmines. Fox had paced back and forth and found nothing but the shit you could find on every street in the city. He now accepted that someone had been there before him. The pimp, obviously. He had a police transmitter in his hand. Jimmy Lawson's transmitter. No whore would have given up that kind of bargaining chip. All any slit ever cared about was sucking cock and stealing some poor guy's money. The pimp wasn't a nuisance. He was a witness. Lucky thing Fox had his rifle. The bullet had clipped Kate's ear because Fox had told it to. He could taste the blood in his mouth when it happened. Kate's blood. Fox licked his lips. The cold wind dried them quickly. He didn't need wind. He needed lightning. The plan wasn't coming together like he wanted. The thing in the back of his head wasn't talking to the front. And the thing between his legs was yelling that it was tired of waiting. Fox was patient, but he wasn't a saint. Tomorrow, all of this had to come together or something really bad was going to happen. He heard a police siren blaring up the street. They were coming faster than Fox had anticipated, no choice but to duck into an alley. Fox wasn't worried about witnesses in this neighborhood. He was a white man with a cop's hat in his hand and a sniper's rifle slung over his shoulder.
No, sir, officer, sir, I didn't see a thing.
The police cruiser zoomed past the alley. Fox's car was parked behind the next row of houses. He knew a back way out. Fox always knew a back way out. He allowed himself a smile. The ground shook beneath his feet. The trains were rumbling through the Howell Y. Trains. The lightning finally struck Fox's skull. The plan jolted from the back to the front. He saw it now, a living, breathing plan that he could hold in his hand and study from all angles. It was complicated, but brilliant. And like everything else that had happened this week, it all started with Jimmy Lawson.